Longert, and he joins us right now on the hotline. Scott, thank you as always for the time. How are you today?
I'm doing great, Andy. Thanks for giving me a call.
Well, a lot to talk about today, and I know you have a new book out that debuted in June, Cy Young, A Baseball Hero, and I also want to circle back around here in a little bit to talk about something that you would have been doing right now had it not been for this pandemic, and that would be giving talks on the 100th anniversary of the 1920 Indians World Series team, so we'll come back to that here in a little bit, but I want to begin with the new book, Cy Young, A Baseball Hero. Now, this is a biography for young readers. Scott, what inspired you to put this book together for young readers?
Well, actually, my publisher approached me about doing something for children to write a baseball book. They do a series for young readers, and I started to think about who would be a good subject, and thought about someone from Ohio, not really far from us, and that would be Cy Young, one of the greatest pitchers of all time. And of course, I think a lot of kids who know baseball a little bit probably know of the Cy Young Award, so I thought it would be a good idea to write about someone so they could understand more about the guy the award was named after.
Absolutely. And diving into who he was a little bit as a person, he grew up a good old rural farm boy in Ohio, and as you would describe him, he was a kind and generous man. What kinds of things did he do to earn that title of a kind and generous man?
Well, he was a good neighbor always, from a young man through the rest of his life. He was very loyal to his friends. One of his catchers was Lou Krieger, who caught for him for a long time for Cleveland and Boston. He was very, very ill in about 1905, 1906, and Cy and his wife Bobby went to his home in Indiana, and they sat with him for 3 weeks until he got better, just because he wanted to take care of a friend. He was also very generous to the local hospital they were building outside of Newcomerstown. He, in October, would pitch a game or two, and the money raised would go towards the hospital, and Cy himself paid for one of the large rooms there just out of his own pocket to help the hospital going. So he was always conscious of other people and always willing to help.
What's interesting about this book to me, Scott, is the times we've had you on before, you have gotten into a number of different topics with the Indians, talking about Addy Joss, the book you've got out on him, No Beer, No Money, No Penance, talking about the Indians in the pre-war years. So it's just drastically different from something like this, which is a biography for young readers. Scott, how was it different putting this one together as opposed to the other books that you've written?
There really was a lot that had to be done. Here I had to go back and look at baseball right after the Civil War, which I hadn't done that in quite some time, and look at the very old game where the guys threw underhand and could throw the ball at you to get you out. So that was a very different type of lifestyle then, very different society. So that took a while to put that together and to look at things that happened before 1900 and things that happened after. The American League hadn't even started yet, and there was no World Series yet, so it was quite a contrast from writing about the more modern Indians in the 20s through the 40s, but it was a great deal of fun to go back and do the research. I really, really enjoyed it.
What were some of the things that you came up with that we'll find in the book that you can share with us about Cy Young? You talked about the generosity and some of the things he had done in that regard. You know, Scott, I think when we sit here and examine a guy like Cy Young today, I fear that the younger generation, had it not been for him being named after the award of the Pitcher of the Year, you know, being named in his honor, I kind of worry that this would be one of the guys who would have kind of gotten lost in the mix. But of course, since the Pitcher of the Year award is named after him, he can never be forgotten. But as you examine some of his accomplishments, what are some of the things that really kind of stand out?
Well, the one right away that gives, I think, everybody pause is that he won 511 games over his career, which is phenomenal. In about 21 years of pitching, he rarely ever missed a start. and he'd usually pitch every 3 days, sometimes two. So he was a tremendous competitor. He won the very first World Series game, back played in 1903, and he threw a perfect game a year later. So these were some remarkable accomplishments, along with winning 30 games in a season several times. So he really was the dominant pitcher of his age, and I think he left a lot of great things for guys to shoot at, but I don't think they'll ever surpass the some of the things that he did.
And think about that for a moment. You know, today you hear these things about 5- and 6-man rotations, and you have guys say they can't really throw on a short rest. That means 3 or 4 days in some cases. And here, you know, Cy Young was throwing like every 3 days. It's crazy to think about. You know, at what point did we see that transformation where they really kind of extrapolated this to the point where you had to have 4 and 5, and in this case, you know, 6 guys in the starting rotation? It just seems like, boy, back then it was just such a different game.
Oh, sure. In his time, again, if you had 3 good starters, you were really blessed, and most teams only had 2. And when the money was on the line and when games had to be won, your number one starter sometimes pitched every 2 days. In the 1903 World Series, which was the best out of 9, the Pirates had Deacon Philippe pitch. I think he pitched 5 times in 10 days. He was their best guy, and they had some injuries, so he just had to go. I don't think staffs really expanded till maybe looking at the 20s, maybe 3 good starters, and then on to the 40s and 50s trying to find a 4th starter. I mean, some of the great Indians teams had just Feller, Lemon, and then they were searching for somebody else in the late 40s. And, of course, they had Gene Bearden in 48. But a lot of times they just had Feller and Lemon, and they were looking for a couple other guys.
Again, we are being joined on the hotline by author and baseball historian Scott Longert. His new book, which came out in June, Cy Young, A Baseball Hero, a biography for young readers. And we mentioned this at the beginning of the interview, Scott. If the virus hadn't canceled so many things this year, well, you would have been out on the road doing some talks on the 100th anniversary of the 1920 Indians World Series team. Scott, what kinds of things did you have planned to discuss had the virus not hit?
Well, of course, it was a very special ball club. They'd been, from 1916 on, the owner, Jim Dunn, took over the ball club. First thing he did was sign Tris Speaker for $50,000 to get things rolling. He gradually built up an excellent club. So in 1920, they were the guys expected to win. And, of course, they went ahead and accomplished that. So that's one of the major things that I plan to talk about, how the team had been built, how the right players were acquired, and the pieces and parts came together to make this a fabulous team. And then, of course, you have to, unfortunately, talk about the tragedy in August when Ray Chapman was killed by a pitch from Carl Mays. That's something that you have to discuss with people and give the idea that how do you recover from something like that? He was a super popular guy, a great friend to everybody on the team, and one day he's gone. And how do you go out 2 days later and play your best baseball? It's next to impossible. But the Indians took a little while, but somehow they pulled themselves together. They got back in first place, and they won the pennant, and then went on to have a fabulous World Series and just set some unbelievable records there. So those were the main topics I was going to discuss, mostly during the summer and the fall. But things didn't work out that way, unfortunately.
What kind of defining quality do you think that team really had? I mean, it's tough for us to sit here today and go back and pinpoint those things, but I know you've had a chance to really examine this team thoroughly. Do you think there were 2 or 3 in particular that stood out?
I think the main one was perseverance. These were guys that were on a mission, and they wouldn't let anything get in their way. They had a good attitude as well, and knew they were a good team and knew what was expected, so there was a lot of harmony on the team as well. The guys pulled together, they worked extremely hard, and got the most out of each other to win themselves the championship. But I think the biggest thing was perseverance. They, no matter what happened, no matter what they had to go through, they were not going to give up. They were going to keep playing their best baseball and strive to win a championship for the first time in 19 years of Cleveland being in the American League.
You mentioned Trish Speaker signing for $50,000. He's certainly the one name that really stands out when you talk about that team. Who are some of the others that you feel like maybe kind of got swept under the rug a little bit or just didn't get the notoriety that they so rightfully deserved?
Oh, sure. Most of the guys had career seasons, almost everybody. Larry Gardner, the third baseman, he was an old teammate of Speaker's from Boston. He had over 100 RBIs, hit 300. Elmer Smith, who hit the Grand Slam in the World Series, he had a tremendous season, over 100 RBIs. And in addition to the Grand Slam in the World Series, he hit two during the regular season, which in 1920 was really difficult to do. In the outfield, Speaker platooned his guys. He had four outfielders that had terrific seasons. Charlie Jamison, the starter in left, hit over 300. His replacement, who would come in when lefties were pitching, Joe Evans, hit 342. And in right field, you had Smith and Joe Wood, the former Boston pitcher who had a great season and really helped out, and Steve O'Neill, the catcher. Steve hit over 300, and he was a rock behind the plate. And you can't cannot mention Stan Kovaleski and Jim Bagby, who between them won 57 ball games, which is a record for many, many years. So you had a lot of contributors there, and I did mention Bill Wambe as well. This was quite a ball club, a very special team, one of the best, I think, in Indians history.
When you compare this team to, you know, all the other World Series winners, and I mean, obviously that's a lot of them, and every single one of them has been a very, very talented team, hence why they won their respective World Series. But, you know, if you were to develop some sort of list, would this Indians team be, you know, a top 10 World Series team of all time, maybe a middle of the road, maybe one of the lesser talented World Series winners? How would you sort of fit them into a list if you could?
I would like to put them in the top 10. I think they really deserved it. When you look at each individual and what they contributed, this was just an incredible baseball team. The guys did amazing feats, and I think they deserve to be ranked somewhere in the top 10, maybe 7, 8, or 9, something like that. But we know that the Yankees had these unbelievable ball clubs for years and years, and the Dodgers, and we can talk about a few other ball clubs. But I think this particular team did everything that was expected and came through in a terrific way. So at least I would definitely would think they belong somewhere in the bottom half of the top 10.
That's always a fun game to play, to go back and take a look at some of the rosters of those teams that made the World Series. For example, if you go back and you take a look at a team that just missed out on the World Series, that 2007 Indians team, you look at that team right now, it's hard for me to sit there and say, how in the world did these guys make it to Game 7 against the Red Sox? Look back at that lineup.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy to think about that team, because a lot of those guys, they never really did a whole lot after that. You know, talking about, you know, Hafner had a nice career with the Indians, but really after 2007, he didn't amount to much. Grady Sizemore, we all know what happened there. And then, you know, you take a look at some other guys on that roster, they didn't do a whole, outside of C.C. Sabathia, there really weren't many other guys that really blossomed after that year. So that's always a fun game to play, to go back and take a look at these rosters many, many years later. So, Scott, that's interesting that you think that this would be a top 10 World Series team. You know, here we are 100 years later, and the Indians, well, hopefully, even if they do get there this year, it'll be a little bit different playing in a 60-game season. But this is a year, hopefully, that we don't ever have to talk about again, where we're only playing 60 games. But, Scott, it's so crazy to think about, because 101 years ago, they kept playing through a pandemic.
They did, actually. I think the main thing was nobody really knew, had a definitive answer on what to do as far as with medicine at the time, and doctors are totally different from today. So I think people just, all they thought about really was if maybe try and wear a mask and you might be okay. And that's what they went with. So no one had much of a feeling about not going to work or playing baseball, or going to the game and sitting a foot away from someone you don't even know who might be coughing or sick. So there was not enough research and study then to tell people to stay away. I don't recall in my research reading much about any ball club or management saying, folks, don't come to the game, you should stay home. I don't think there was much of that at the time. They thought, I think, that wearing a mask was all you can do, and you're going to have to suffer the consequences. There's really little we can do about it. Today, today, we obviously know a lot better than that. But back then, their only weapon they had was a mask, and they hope for the best with it.
And we're hoping for the best with what we've got right now, that's for sure, because we are in some really, really rough times. Hopefully, we can get back to normal very, very soon. Well, Scott, as always, we appreciate you joining us. The book is available on Amazon, correct?
On Amazon and Books by the Million and Barnes & Noble, and I think independent bookstores, if they don't have a copy, they can order it for you. So it's readily available.
The book is Cy Young, A Baseball Hero, a biography for young readers. Scott, as always, we appreciate the time. Always a pleasure to catch up with you. We certainly hope that you and yours are staying safe and healthy in the middle of this whole pandemic, and we look forward to catching up again soon.
Thanks, Andy. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Scott. Again, that's Scott Longert, author and baseball historian, joining us here on Bullseye on the Afternoon. Check out the book, Cy Young, A Baseball Hero, a biography for young